Yeah, you're all very welcome along to the All-Ireland semi-final review podcast. Well, we said we'd be back, win, lose or draw. And guess what? We won. We beat Dublin. And the countdown well underway here in the Mayo News offices to the All-Ireland football final on the 23rd of September. Mayo against Donegal. It has a nice ring to it. And delighted to say I'm joined this week again by Sean Rice and Edwin McGrail, who were alongside me for the preview podcast. And also delighted to welcome back Daniel Carey from his year out. I think, Dan, you were off finding yourself for the last 12 months. Good to have you back. Were you happy with what you found?
Thanks very much, Mike. Yeah, I think Nirvana, the Buddhists call it, I think. So, had that kind of feeling with about 30 seconds to go in Croke Park last Sunday when finally done, we were actually going to hold out. I think there might have been a few heart attacks left and right of me in the lower Hogan.
Yeah, what a day. Sean Rice, we were talking last week about what we could expect. And you were quite bullish about Mayo's prospects, and you said you had a good feeling about this semi-final, about this game. Tell us, was it anything like what you expected? Danny spoke of heart attacks there. I mean, it certainly wasn't good for the heart, but you must have been a very proud Mayo man when that final whistle blew.
I am, Mike. It was a great experience because we don't get them too often in Croke Park. But what I was delighted with and what I didn't expect was that Mayo would be so good. That they would be so much ahead of Dublin. And then when they had gone 10 points ahead, what I didn't expect was that it would come back to 2 points in the end and that they'd be fighting to hold on to 2 points. But nevertheless, I was proud of them.
Ed, when you were a busy man on Sunday, like the rest of us, of course, I must throw that in, you were down around the dressing rooms after the match, soaking up the mood. But before all of that, you were in among the press corps in the Hogan stand watching it all unfold. There was quite an incredible atmosphere around the stadium all day, wasn't there? And tell us, what was it like watching it in the company of the Fourth Estate, especially our friends in the national media? Were they all sitting pretty and sitting comfortably when the drama was unfolding in that second half?
Well, they were probably sitting a bit more comfortably than I was, but no, I don't think they were too relaxed. And they were, once Dublin got it back to 4 points, there was a consensus that Mayo were in serious trouble and they weren't going to hang on to the lead. And I suppose James Horan was possibly the calmest person in Croke Park in that regard. He didn't look like he flinched, but he admitted afterwards that the last 20 minutes. Torture was the word he used to describe it, and there was a lot of a feeling around the press box that, you know, Mayo were going to let it slip again. But the fact that they didn't, in fairness, a lot of the national journalists were wondering afterwards, is this a different Mayo team? That if the kind of consensus was, if it had been another Mayo team in previous years that had such a lead whittled away, that they would have went on and lost the game. But not in this particular case, thanks to.
Tell us, before we talk about the game maybe in a bit more detail, you're one of the very lucky ones that get into the dressing room area afterwards and you get to see what exactly happens in the minutes and in the immediate aftermath of big matches like this. For the benefit of the people listening at the moment, what's it like down there around that Mayo dressing room? I know there was a lot of injuries, the medical team were busy, there was a lot of coming and going, but try and maybe describe the mood for us, the atmosphere down under the Hogan stand.
Well, what essentially happens is when we come down from the press box, we're sent into, it's essentially like a small lecture hall, and we wait there for the managers to come in. Pat Gilroy came in first with Brian Cullen, James Horan followed, and after that we wait outside the dressing room door nearing the Mayo bus for the players to come out togged and hopefully get a few words from a few of them as they're passing. Lee Keegan was about the place, had just returned from hospital. He told one journalist that it was a compound fracture and a dislocation of his finger, but he'd be fine for the All-Ireland final. So obviously quite a brave enough man there, Lee. I'd have to say generally the mood among the Mayo players was very relaxed, and it had a kind of job done feel to it. Like, you know, there was no high fiving or anything. Maybe some of that was because there was a bit of relief that they held on after leading by 10 points. But it was very much a case of job done, next game, or as James Horan seems to love calling it, game 5, not the All-Ireland final, but game 5. There's a very kind of a very methodical approach to the Mayo players. Certainly don't seem to be getting carried away with anything, and that was reflected in a lot of the comments afterwards, you know, it was very calm and measured.
What about you, Dan? You were out among the masses. You were sitting in the stand watching it all unfold. Tell us from the snapshot you took of the mood around you and the fans around you. I know you had one very interesting character very close to you. You were telling us about him a little bit earlier on. You got a slice of a different kind of Mayo supporter, didn't you? You got him up close and personal.
Very much so, Mike. Yeah, well, there were two guys to my immediate left in the Laura Hogan who were I think well oiled is the expression. They kind of missed the first, I'd say, 7 minutes of the first half and maybe the first 9 minutes of the second half. I think it's fair to say they might have been the most informed Mayo fans in the world. They asked me if Colin Boyle was playing, and I said no, Chris Barrett is in for him. And one of them said, who? As if I had suggested that Giovanni Trapattoni was going to be playing at wing back for Mayo. Later on in the second half, when Richie Feeney scored his point, one of them grabbed me and put his mouth so close to my ear that I think I'm still washing spittle out of it. He brought me the news that was Richie Feeney's first ever championship point. I actually don't know whether that's statistically accurate or not, but I have the saliva to prove that one man was passionately putting that argument across anyway.
Sean, in terms of previous Mayo Championship games at Croke Park, I mean, where does last Sunday rank in terms of intensity, excitement and relief and the general experience we got treated to? Can you remember a Mayo game ever quite like that?
No, I can't, Mike. 1996 and 1997 were two outstanding years for Mayo football as well, because they had reached the All-Ireland final and the 2 years. But it's not so much that they were great times, great teams, great times. There was great emotion in the crowd, and there was certainly a lot of emotion after McHale was put off in the match, in the 1996 match. But somehow this is different. I think nobody expected. When we went to the match in 1996, we kind of went there very high in expectation that we were going to win down Ireland. The following year, we were twice as high going in to meet Kerry, because we had beaten Kerry in the semi-final the previous year, and we were twice as high going in then, expecting to win the final. We didn't. And I think all those things have come back to haunt us as a kind of supporters of Mayo. I think a lot of people went up there, believing that Dublin were going to win it, and to win it easily enough, I think when that was all over, and when Mayo held out, because of the way they held out, I think they were kind of stunned. People were stunned, and they were absolutely... It was a very, very happy kind of a crowd that was around. Joyful. Not ecstatic, but just absolutely joyful. I think it was probably one of the best memories I've had of Mayo in Croke Park.
Yeah, it's funny, the little vignettes, I suppose, that everyone takes, but... Talking to my own dad last night, who's been going to Croke Park following Mayo for almost 50 years, he said he will always remember just the immediate aftermath of the game last Sunday, when the green and red of Mayo came on, and it was incredible to see so many Mayo people staying behind and singing that song. And I don't know, it did have the feel of something very, very special. And I'm sure you felt it, Dan, as well, down in the stand. It was a very emotional few minutes in the immediate aftermath of that final whistle. It did have the feel of something special.
Very much so, Mike, yeah. And I can't remember a situation in Croke Park, certainly for a semi-final, where you had essentially the Mayo crowd just stopped more or less as one. It's funny, when we eventually made our way out of the Laura Hogan, we were actually stalled outside Croke Park, I'd say, for the guts of 10 minutes. The crowd actually wasn't moving outside of the fringes over near the Croke Park Hotel. And there were still quite a large number of Dublin people who were, for the most part, were very gracious in their comments about Mayo. But it was almost like time had stopped. People were kind of wanted to savour the moment. Even when there were scores, every single Mayo score was greeted with a standing ovation around me. And I can't remember that happening really since the since the mid-90s period that, that Sean was talking about. But at the same, and joyful is the word, you know, it, there was a sense that we were definitely going to kind of enjoy this moment while we had it, and yet it wasn't completely, you know, kind of balls out crazy, you know, it, there's still one more hurdle, and it one man did say to me on the way out, what's it going to be like if we win? But hopefully we'll get to answer that question before September is out.
And Ed, just before we move on to talk about the game itself in a bit more detail, again, for the many people listening who aren't in the county and maybe are around the country or around the globe at the minute, what have the last few days been like since people have come back down to earth a little bit? What have you sensed the mood to be on the ground at the moment in the county?
Well, I was actually in Castlebar District Court this morning, a place where I was actually working there for a change, you know. But I was here this morning, and wouldn't usually be a haven for football discussions. But I saw three different solicitors. I won't name them, but none of whom I can remember seeing at a football match talking about the All-Ireland and if they can get their hands on tickets. Anywhere I've been in the last few days, it has been the only subject of conversation. You see it on Facebook. My whole home feed is covered with people talking about tickets and talking about the All-Ireland final and sharing competitions for tickets in a bid to try and get their hands on those elusive tickets. It's great to be in an All-Ireland final, and it's great to be able to enjoy it, and I think we should enjoy it. It's not something that every county gets to have, and when you're in there you should enjoy it. I know there's a small section of people who would feel that, you know, we shouldn't talk about it at all. Play it down because we've made these mistakes before. That's the job of the players and the management. The supporters' jobs is to enjoy it. And it looks like the next few weeks in Mayo, the recession won't be over, but it might be put on hold somewhat. And it's a very excited and jubilant place after the weekend.
And I think if you needed a golden rule to live your life by over the next 3 weeks, Noel Kennelly, I thought, put it quite brilliantly this week when he said, if you could keep the painting of sheep to a minimum, everything should be just fine. So I suppose, Sean, before we look forward, let's look backwards. In terms of last Sunday's game, what are the standout moments for you? What did you learn, or what will you take from the win over Dublin?
Well, what surprised me most of all at the start was that the way the midfield, and Alan Dillon in particular, and all of the team, in fact, halfbacks as well, fed the inside forwards. I hadn't an awful lot of faith in our two inside forwards, to be quite candid. I thought it would take the half back line to come on up to help out our own half forward line to win the game. But they constantly fed the two corner forwards, and it was the way they won ball that amazed me. Inverley was absolutely tremendous, the way he could go. Ender is small, but he's very strong, and he held great ball. When they fed the wings to him, he was able to go out, pull the defence with them, and beat the two backs, cornerbacks. And Dublin were beaten all end up. Michael Conroy did the same on the other wing. When the ball was sent out that wing, he won the race to the ball, and won it, and beat his man to it. And this is what amazed me, the way that Mayo fed from the beginning. They fed the two wings, the two inside forwards. Now, they weren't the key notes of the victory at all, but they were the things that surprised me at the beginning, because Mayo dwelt on that and won a lot of good scores from that kind of play.
Ed, I know sometimes the mind can play tricks on us, but you've gone back and watched the game again, and obviously you get maybe a slightly different perspective when you sit down in the comfort of your own home and you get to watch it in slow motion at times. Anything different about it second time round?
It's just interesting to notice a few of the trends. When you're watching it in real time, I suppose you're caught up in the emotion of it, and sometimes and it's hard to look at it clinically, but Sean is right there in terms of the full forward line, and in particular Michael Conroy. An amount of ball went into Michael Conroy, a kick pass in generally from outside the 50 metre line. In fact, looking back on it, Mayo's first 8 scores all came from the ball being played from outside, a kick pass from outside the 50, been played into the right corner forward position. Inder Varley had ran across the number 15 position, and Michael Conroy ran into the space, picked up a lot of those balls. Sometimes Richie Feeney won a few of those balls, sometimes Killian O'Connor, and they either directly led to scores or led to 45s deflections, and Killian O'Connor putting over the 45s. So whether that's an area Dublin had targeted or Mayo had targeted deliberately to create a bit of space there in that right corner forward position, because you have to remember Kevin Nolan, the Dublin left half back, was marking Kevin McLaughlin, who was coming deep. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the advantages of players not playing in their own positions a lot of the time, that you can manipulate the space, and that seemed to be what Mayo were doing, creating space down that side. Another thing just very interesting looking back on it, Dublin kicked the ball 5 times short into David Clark's hands. 4 of those resulted in Mayo going up the field and pointing at the other end. So that's potentially an 8-point swing, you know, which is huge, and just shows how people laugh sometimes and hear, just put it dead. Well, that kind of strengthens that argument. Putting it dead there in those cases, if those balls had went wide, it would be very hard to see Mayo getting forward as easily to score those points from a restart from the kickouts. Just a few interesting things in terms of possessions as well. The men that were busiest, Aidan O'Shea was on the ball more than any other Mayo player. Keith Higgins, Alan Dillon weren't far behind. Killian O'Connor and Kevin McLaughlin. And what's noticeable as well is how many scores Dillon or McLaughlin were centrally involved in. Mayo scored 19 points. Between putting them over themselves or contributing with a maybe not an assist, but a very important ball in the build-up to the score, those two players were involved in 16 out of the 19 scores, so their importance to Mayo is very obvious from that.
I really hope Jim McGuinness is not a big fan of the Mayo News podcast, or we've just blown it. But Dan, there's been a lot of talk, particularly in the last 24 hours, about the performance of the referee, and I know Darragh O'Shea's column has been the talk of the office here today. Did you get a sense during the game, again out among the fans and sitting there in the best seat in the house, I'm sure, that anyone had a problem with him, that he was pro Mayo, anti Dublin, or vice versa?
Most of the crew in my immediate vicinity were Mayo, although there was a clump of Dublin fans off to my right. There was a fair bit of generalised rage directed at the referee, but I would say the most specific thing actually that angered people was the aftermath of the incident that left Inder Varley injured. It took Joe McQuillan so long to deal with that incident. He went in to speak to his umpire, he spoke to his linesman, he went to book a Dublin defender, and then he obviously got a call in his ear to say wrong man, and he backed away. There was some talk about the amount of Mayo injuries in the second half and the amount of injury time at the end of the game, but a huge amount of time appeared to elapse for McQuillan to deal with what actually turned out to be a fairly minor incident. Like a lot of people and like everyone in my immediate vicinity, none of us had actually seen what had happened that had left Inder Varley needing attention. What we did see was the aftermath with Rory O'Carroll trying to pull him up. It took McQuillan so long to talk to O'Carroll that I think a belief had built up on both sides that he was about to be shown a red card. Now, most people seem to feel that would have been overly harsh, but the mood of the crowd was such that this thing had gone on for so long. God, there had to be something major out of it, and he just ended up, I think, looking kind of a little bit foolish. Obviously, unlike in the press box, you don't have access to replays on the big screen. So, but I suppose what's happening in the modern age now is people are getting messages from people at home who are watching it, and that's only, I suppose, feeding the general rage that happens to every referee, whether they're making a good or a bad job of the game.
I just think in relation to that incident with Inder Varley, there was remarkable similarities with the National League final, where Donal Vaughan went down after receiving an accidental knee to the head, and Noel O'Leary came over and tried to lift him off the ground 3 or 4 times. And no Mayo player, apart from Alan Dillon, who was pushed back, intervened. The last day Jason Doherty spotted what was going on, went over, shoulder charged Rory O'Carroll to the ground. He might have got booked for that, but a few more Mayo players came along and said that they weren't going to stand for that. I think Cork smelt weakness when Mayo allowed that to happen to Donal Vaughan, when they allowed Noel O'Leary to I suppose pull him around the place like a rag doll, and he could potentially have been seriously injured, and so a few Mayo players got involved. The last day, I think the Mayo players took a stand. They didn't do anything stupid that any of them was going to get sent off for, but they let the Dublin players know that they weren't going to stand for this, and that they were going to stand strong against any of that sort of play.
And I have it on fairly good authority as well, believe it or not, there was some pinching involved, I think, that agitated Endivarley initially. I think that might have been a tactic of one of the Dublin defenders who was trying to win the win his battle. But Sean, Danny mentioned injuries there as well, and it's a point you made to me a day or two ago. You thought it got lost a bit in the post-match analysis. I mean, James Horan's plans torn to shreds early in the match with injuries.
Yeah. Just before I go on to that, Mike, I just want to refer to what you were saying about the referee, because according to O'Shea's article today, the referee was lenient to Mayo. He wasn't too lenient when there was a blatant trip on Alan Dillon that could have put him to the sideline. That could have it was a vicious, blatant attack in front of the referee, and there wasn't even a yellow card issued for it. You know, so those things have. Those statistics that Darrow Shea comes out of there today, I just don't pay any heed to them at all. The referee did a good job, and that was it. Regarding the injuries, yes, I have to say that that all the analysis, most of the analysis, particularly at national level, is about how Dublin lost the game, not how Mayo won it. And there's an awful lot of talk there about Mayo's. Not so much about how well Mayo played when they reached a 10-point lead. It's about the lull afterwards that in which they couldn't compete with Dublin's attack. But that was because Mayo lost four of their best players. And at that stage, they had lost McLaughlin, and they had lost
Lee Keegan,
and they had lost Feeney, and they had lost
Colin Boyle. Yeah.
That's right. But if any team, Kerry, Mead, Cork, lost three or four of their best players in the middle of a match, I think they would have wilted too. I have no doubt about it in the world. So I don't pay any particular heed to the way Mayo fell. I think what I have to say is that Mayo were tremendous in holding out, because for the first time they started doing a bit of thinking. They didn't let Dublin go through for goals. They pulled them down. Okay, there was a bit of theatre in it and all that kind of thing. And they certainly fell for injuries, and they tried to delay time as much as they could. That has been done to Mayo time and time again. Mayo have gone up there time and time again as innocent as anything. They weren't innocent the last day. They used their heads. They used their heads very well, and I was very, very proud of them the way they did it.
Yeah, I just think there's a number of comments to be made on the nature of the comeback from Dublin. Mayo were 10 points in front, and like Sean rightly says, had lost. I think the biggest loss to Mayo was for over half an hour in that game. They didn't have their two best performing members of the half-back line this year in Lee Keegan and Colin Boyle. Colin Boyle came on and he wasn't anywhere near his best. He couldn't have been, but he still made a difference when he came on. But when a team is 10 points ahead, it's very easy for the opposition. They're the easiest scores you'll ever get in a match to get the next 2 or 3 points, because you know you have a bit of pride about you. You don't want to be hammered. The other team might subconsciously sit back and ease off a bit. And suddenly a momentum of its own is created. And the greatest momentum Dublin had was when they got it back to 2 points. But yet, Mayo, from there on, outscored Dublin 2-1. I think the contrast with 2006 are remarkable there. And that's what the difference. In 2006, Mayo reeled Dublin in. And Dublin, in the closing 5 minutes, couldn't find it within them to level, never mind go on and win the game. In last Sunday, Mayo were asked serious, serious questions. But when hard yards had to be made and big balls had to be won in midfield, Jason Gibbons, Barry Moran caught two huge balls. Keith Higgins made a couple of very big runs. Killian O'Connor nailed a pressure-free. And Shamey O'Shea broke through after an incredible bit of a break and play from Chris Barrett to put over. over the second score, and I think they're worth reflecting on in a big way, that when it was put up to Mayo, they came strong with those scores.
There was also the chance, of course, Ed, that when they were ahead like that, Jason Doherty broke through for what should have been a goal. I think they were 7 or 8 points ahead at the time. If he got that goal, and it was an open chance for him, and he missed it, he hit the ball across the face of the goal and put it wide. But if he scored that time, the game was finished. Dublin would not have come back, no doubt about that.
Dan, reading the post-match reaction, particularly from James Horan, what's your gut instinct on how he feels after Sunday? I mean, there are so many different opinions. You know, Mayo so good for 45, 50 minutes, and then this last quarter collapse, but yet they win the game. Reading between the lines, using your amateur psychology skills, how do you think James Horan feels after it all?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. James Horan used the phrase "we ran out of juice" to describe what had happened. You know, I saw some of the analysis appeared to, you know, obviously when you get a turnaround like that, you know, the first thing is people want to know, well, what happened? As Sean said, you know, Mayo had lost a number of key players. Michael Darren McCauley started to pick up ball and all of that. At the same time, James Horan was very much emphasising the positive, you know, the fact that they had played so well for 50 minutes, and it seemed to be very much, for me, in keeping with all of his comments kind of all year, you know, not a man to get too negative in his comments when Mayo were beaten in Ballyshannon or elsewhere in the league, and equally not leaping up and down in his post-match comments when Mayo win a big one. He's he's happy, I suppose, to emphasise the strides that Mayo have made and the differences with maybe past Mayo Croke Park experiences, but there were no hostages to fortune, and I think most Mayo fans would have been quite content reading James Horan's post-match comments.
So also interesting note there too, Mike, that our problems started around midfield, where Dublin crowded midfield when they knew that they were doing their best to find some escape. And in crowding midfield, they broke the ball. The ball broke. And at that stage, the main man that we have for collecting broken ball around the middle of the field is McLaughlin, and he was out injured at the time, and that was one of the great problems that I felt added to Mayo's problem at saying they couldn't hold the ball. Now, eventually, Barry Morden did hold vital ball, absolutely vital ball near the end, and he got fouled, and that enabled Mayo to get the forwards moving again. But up to that, and that could be, it's always a problem that vital ball, broken ball in the middle of the field is vital ball, and that's where many games are won and lost, you know. And I'd hope maybe in the All-Ireland final that Mayo will note that.
Yeah, just to add to what Sean was saying there about Kevin McLaughlin, when he was off, Dublin scored 7 unanswered points. I don't think that's a coincidence. Dublin were always going to come back to the ball, come back into the game at some stage. Andy Moran said afterwards it coincided with a stage in the game too where Alan Dillon went out of the game slightly, and the two boys at midfield perhaps started to tire. You know, they put in big shifts up until then. But I think the manner of how Mayo finished and the manner of how Mayo performed they started poorly in the first 5 minutes. But from the 5th minute to the 45th minute, they outscored Dublin 17 points to 5. You know, that's incredible going. And they were very confident going into the game. And it was a confidence they would have, you know, had to rationalise from the basis of how they were moving in training, from the basis of league results. You know, they couldn't really say that they could be that confident after beating Down, because it was a poor Down team. Now they've beaten the All-Ireland champions, and they had it put up to them. They opened up a 10-point lead. They had that whittled away, and they managed to kick on later on. I think that'll do wonders for their confidence, because you know, you can talk in abstracts and away from an actual game situations about you know, how confident you are in your own ability and so on and so forth. But you need affirmation of that, and I think they got it the last day in a big way against the All Ireland champions in Croke Park in a pressure cooker situation, especially later on. And I think it'll bring them on an awful lot for the final.
Well, lads, we have to wrap up. Sean, we might leave the last word to you. 2.5 weeks to go to the All-Ireland football final. Any pearls of wisdom or perhaps words of advice for those Mayo supporters listening right now, or indeed any of the Mayo squad that might be listening? What would you advise them to do over the next couple of weeks? How are we going to finish the job this time?
I have no advice, Mike. I have no advice at all. I think, you know, the Mayo backroom team are doing a great job, and if they just continue to improve, they've only one more game to go. Game 5, as the manager says, it's the last game. If they can just pull it off, that's all we want to know. I have no advice at all for supporters or for players. they have to do that themselves.
Danny, just before we go, any thoughts on painting sheep or anything else for that matter?
I suppose, you know, we hinted at it earlier. There's a belief appears to have grown in Mayo, perhaps rooted in the 96 thing, that that, you know, essentially the green and red Hollymount tree was responsible for Mayo losing the All-Ireland. Now, I've no doubt. I mean, I interviewed John Casey last year, and he talked about going to Letterkenny for a week or 10 days before that All-Ireland. He said he just had to get away from the madness of people running into his shop, RTE, every media organisation in the country wanting to get a hold of him.
Your sport, I think.
But, you know, I think now, on the one hand, I think the general hype will probably be more easily, evenly distributed, even when it came to a man of the match, where Casey was clearly the standout man against Kerry in 96. You know, arguably, you could have had 5 or 6 different players who were the standout against Dublin. I think, though, fans need to remember, you know, this is what we've all dreamed of. There's a way to embrace the next few weeks where, you know, if you kind of dare to dream that Mayo might beat Donegal and you're a sheep farmer in Ballyglass, you know, that's okay. You know, you're not losing Mayo the All-Ireland by thinking, God, maybe we can actually beat Donegal. It's okay. Players obviously have to kind of learn to ride the wave, and it's an interesting one. This is the first All-Ireland of the social network era for Mayo. Players have never been as accessible in terms of Twitter and Facebook. Hopefully fans have enough sense not to be busting players' heads asking them for tickets via Facebook and Twitter, particularly if they've never met them. I draw a distinction there between you know, players having to, as Killian O'Connor alluded to, you know, they have to kind of keep their heads on the business. You know, what fans do, as long as it's not completely insane, isn't going to lose Mayo this match. So, you know, it doesn't happen all that often. We should enjoy it when it comes around.
I was just thinking there, considering Sean had none or very little advice for Mayo fans. Obviously, Dan, it's you had a lot to get off your chest. And I think if Dr. Phil ever hangs up his stethoscope, I'm not sure if he actually owns one or not, but I think you're the next agony uncle in waiting. Ed, last word to you, and this has to be the last word. We'll knock off the tape in a moment and we'll talk all night, but the last word on the podcast goes to Ed McGrail.
Yeah, I just remember when I was watching the Cork Donegal semi-final, and speaking on Twitter, I sent out a tweet, hypothetically speaking, if Mayo were to beat Dublin, who would supporters like to play in the final, Cork or Donegal? And the amount of people that said back to me, "Oh, we have to concentrate on the semi-final first before we start talking about the final." And my reaction was similar enough to Dan. That's the player's job and the manager's job to worry about who you might play. And fans are allowed to dream and allowed to, you know, these fanciful flights of fantasy. It's Donegal as it turns out now, and like I said earlier, it doesn't happen too often. Maybe it's happened to me all 3 times in the last 8 years. That's a privilege, and I think we know how to enjoy it without, like Sean says, you know, going too crazy. There'll be exceptions to that rule, there always is, but you know, I don't think people should be apologising for enjoying an All-Ireland final. There's 30 other counties that would love to be there, and it's great that Mayo are there and hopefully we'll be back recording a podcast after the All-Ireland final talking about absolute pandemonium in the county after Mayo and All-Ireland.
Yeah, we'll have to give Dan his own separate podcast. I think that's it. Lads, thanks very much to Edwin McGrail, Daniel Carey and Sean Rice. And as the lads said, players play, managers manage, supporters support, And what we do here in the Mayo News is we produce the best sports supplement in this neck of the woods, we're delighted to say. And also we talk about the game here on the podcast. And so between now and the All-Ireland final, and indeed for as long as you're picking up a local paper, don't forget we're out every single Tuesday morning with the Mayo News sports supplement. We're on mayonews.ie, and we'll be back with an All-Ireland final preview podcast as well in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, that's it from us, and enjoy the build-up.